I decided to go down to Key Largo to a resort and took my significant other, Dina. That evening, at that specific block of time, we had walked into this place called the Raw Bar, and we sit at the only two seats available next to another couple, and we order a drink called a Dinarita. It's a margarita with a good tequila, splash of Chambord, no salt. So the couple next to us say, "Those sound great, get us two of those." That struck up a conversation with an individual that was involved in golf. 3 weeks later, I called him and said, "Listen, I've got this course, 118 acres. I know we can't do an 18-hole golf course. What can we do? Sort of a 9-hole. He goes, "Actually, you can build an 18-hole golf course on that acreage." And there's this pregnant pause. And he goes, "Let me introduce you to somebody." And that led us to a gentleman in Colorado, Rick Buckton, who is, I think, a legend, a golf course architect who's worked with some of the greats, Weisskopf, Nicklaus. 9 years has taken him to develop this prototype, and it was that aha moment. This is it. Many months later, became our Double Loop golf course. That ultimately evolved into the T36 Golf.
Welcome to the Mod Golf Podcast, where I speak with the entrepreneurs, the innovators, the disruptors, and the influencers who are shaping the future of golf. I am your host, Colin Weston, and we're starting off season 15 here. Gosh, over 180 episodes. I'm selling myself short there. And we just reached a big milestone only a couple of days ago, and that was we reached the 100,000 download mark, which for any podcast, from what I've read and what I've heard, is worth celebrating. So really happy about that. I have to thank you, the listeners and the viewers on YouTube, for making all that happen. And you know what? We're just getting started because we've got more amazing stories to share with you over this next season with a dozen episodes. And today we're going to start it off strong. And I have not one. Yeah, you get a two for the price of one today, everyone. So I've got the co-founders of T36 Golf. I have Real Valeriano, and I also have David Hinkle, the co-founders of T36 Golf. I'm not going to spoil exactly what they're doing, but if you want to say disruptive and innovative, what they're doing here with a green grass experience, these guys have cracked the code and not just talking the talk. They have got their first course going, and we're going to talk about that and so much more. Before we learn about T36 Golf, I'm going to introduce both of these gentlemen. Rio, David, welcome to the Mod Golf Podcast.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, Colin, thank you. Thank you for taking the time today to speak with us.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right, so I'm just going to be riffing back and forth here. I'm going to start off with one at a time. Rio, you first, and then David, you can follow up. The icebreaker question I've asked for the longest time in the podcast is your first golf experience ever. And that power of invitation, who invited you that first time? Maybe you were 5 years old, maybe it was last Thursday, but I'd love to hear that. So Rio, I'd love to hear about your first ever golf experience and who made that happen for you in your life.
I guess it goes way back to I was about 12, been a baseball player for most of my young adult life. I was walking across a field and there was another friend of mine and he had teed up a ball and he had a club in his hand. And I'd never seen or experienced that. So I went over there curious and he gave me a whack at it. And it just was so different than a wood bat and a baseball that really, really changed a course in my life with golf.
Wow. After that, what was your first on-course experience? How did that happen? What was the next step and when did that happen in your life?
On-course experience was several years later. When I actually decided to get serious about playing golf, I was at, I guess it was Pine Crest, I think the name of the course was, just a local municipal course. It was just such a beautiful day, great way to do something that was so very different than what I was used to on a baseball diamond that it just stuck with me.
Nice, nice. So you had one of those pure shots early on and you became a golfer for life. It seems that happens. That even though you got a lot of bad shots in between, once you hit that first pure one, you're addicted.
Yeah, you learn about slices, shanks, and hooks too.
So there we go. Is that As I said a couple of weeks ago to Christina Kim, LPGA professional, she's talking to me about all nine shots she's able to hit in practices. And I said, you know what? I'm able to hit all nine shots too. The only difference with me as a 14 handicapper is I cannot decide when I'm going to hit each one of those nine shots. But I've got them all. I got them all, man.
They're all in the bag.
Got them all. Absolutely. All right, David, over to you. I'd love to hear your first golf experience and that. Who invited you to have that experience?
I'm going to predict that I'm probably going to have a different answer than you've ever heard before. I've never really had that situation. I grew up in Northeast Tennessee, grew up an athlete, football player, then basketball player, didn't really have access to golf and didn't have time. You know, get out of college, I start running for competition, playing basketball for competition, working. I'm horrible at hobbies. As we talk to you today, I'm on the fifth fairway of one of the country clubs in Knoxville, Tennessee, and I still don't play golf. I have played golf, but at this point in my life, I'm an endurance athlete. I'm a runner. I do Ironman events. I've been married for a long time, and the secret of staying married a long time is I don't have time for golf and endurance training. So I suck at hobbies. I've spent my whole career competing in business and competed in my hobby life. I raced cars at one point in my life as well. When I played golf, I've become very frustrated because you go out and it's a very humbling sport and it takes a lot of time to be adequate. And I just haven't had that time in my career. So I come from a retail background, which we'll talk about more. And I understand everything that's going on in golf. And my oldest son's a fantastic golfer. His dad, not so much. So my first foray into my big golf experience is really T36 golf and launching that and understanding that from a different perspective on the sport part of it than Rio comes from as somebody who's been a golfer his entire life.
Got it.
You know,
got it.
And Colin, the course he lives on, arguably one of the best courses in Tennessee. Fox Den has hosted many Nike Pro-Ams. I mean, it's a beautiful golf course and the guy doesn't play golf. So there
Wow.
you go.
Wow.
My partner doesn't allow me to have enough time to play golf and train for endurance.
Both very high time intensive sports or hobbies. Yeah, so you got to pick your poison. It sounds like
That's
the endurance
right,
training is the way you've gone there. Well, this could bode well for this podcast episode, David, because you are the second person I've interviewed that does not play golf. And the other one that was a couple of years ago, that was the most downloaded and listened to episode by more than a factor of three than any other we've had. So maybe that's a good precedent to have here.
Well, when Rio and I started this journey, we'll share a lot with you. I mean, it has been a journey. Somebody told me the founder of the Golf Network didn't play golf either.
There we go. So they're golf adjacent. They're in the business. Okay, well, let's start with this. I love to hear about how you two have come together. I know we can talk for hours here if we go way back as far as your experience and then in school and college. Let's start with how you two met. Have you been friends for years? And then the aha moment that you came up with the concept of T36 golf. And then you decided it's like, you know what, we're just going to stop talking about this. We see the business here and the opportunity. We're going to go for it. So talk about the early days and your friendship and your partnership.
So let me start off, if I might, David. I met David many, many, many years ago. My initial intro, he mentioned earlier his involvement with racing and in particular with Porsches. He had a European auto garage, I believe I got that right, David, with his offices. Got a chance to meet him there. And I was just so impressed with the way he had his office structured, set up, the garage in the back with all these beautiful cars. And you could eat off the floors of his garage. I mean, it was just amazing the way it was structured. It just stuck with me. And many, many years later, I was reintroduced to him through a mutual partner of ours. So that's how we knew each other.
Interesting.
Yeah, we always share this story. I always start this story on the first steps of the T36 journey, and then I throw the ball to Rio, and he can share with you the next steps. So Baytown, Texas, you know, we were on the early stages of coming out of COVID, and I'm well over 3 million miles, calling on frequent flyer miles in my career working in retail. Economic development director for the city of Baytown at that point, I'd known for some time, and he asked me to come down and take a look at Baytown. So I think I went 51 weeks without traveling. And so that was my first trip flying to Houston. The airport traffic was very light. And I recall that day a big jumbo jet had taken off to either Japan or China, and they said they have 12 people on the plane. So it was still those early days of coming out of COVID. And so Brett Gardello's economic development, Brett takes me around Baytown, and he shows me this former golf course that was being used as a 12-hole disc course, had a clubhouse, you know, had a couple of storage buildings. And he said, our city has three large high schools, and there's no place to play golf. So all the high school kids are having to go to the adjacent communities to play golf. We'd really like to have a golf course. And I said, Brett, I like the real estate. I understand that, but that's really not what I do, but duly noted. So I came back, and several weeks later, I reached out to Rio and a friend of mine in Los Angeles who does a lot of public-private development, investment, et cetera. And I said, hey, guys, I think there's some interesting opportunities in Baytown. You come back with me and let's look at it. So we go back to Baytown, second time for me. They show us a golf course. We all have, in essence, the same type of response. Like, you know, we like the real estate, but that's really not what we do.
Right.
And we're trying to figure out, how do you make a golf course work? Because what had happened, it was originally a private and public course. What was it, Rio? 200 plus acres, I believe.
That's right.
Local developer did that, and it got transacted. They sold off land. The city ended up buying what remained to be about 128 acres. And so we knew there wasn't enough land to do a traditional golf course. At that point, this is, Colin, when I pitched the story to Rio, and he can talk to you about the next steps, about how we went from, hey, this is an interesting piece of real estate, we don't really develop golf courses, to, hey, we have an idea. So, Rio?
Yeah, so having toured it, my first response was, I've got 118 acres approximately to work with. You can't build an 18-hole golf course on 118 acres. It's never been done. You can't do it. That was marinating for several weeks. And I decided to go down to Key Largo to a resort that I've frequented through the years, and took my significant other, Dina, to this resort. One evening, literally, it's like those ships that sail up against each other. That evening, that Saturday, at that specific block of time, we had walked into this place called the Raw Bar, and the bartender waved us over. There's only two seats at the bar, and we sit at the only two seats available next to another couple, and we order a drink that actually we'll have at the golf course called a Dinarita. It's a margarita with a good tequila, splash of Chambord, no salt. The bartender looks at me and goes, I've never heard of that. What do you call it? So it's a Dinarita. So the couple next to us say, hey, those sound great. Get us two of those.
Right.
That struck up a conversation with an individual that was involved in golf. We kept in touch with each other. About 2 or 3 weeks later, I called him and said, listen, I've got this course, 118 acres plus or minus. I know we can't do an 18-hole golf course. What can we do? Sort of a 9-hole. He goes, actually, you can build an 18-hole golf course on that acreage. And there's this pregnant pause. And he goes, let me introduce you to somebody. And that led us to a gentleman in Colorado, Rick Buckton, who is, I think, a legend, a very quiet, unassuming kind of a golf course architect who's worked with some of the greats, Weisskopf, Nicholas, Bill Corr, Corr Crenshaw.
Right.
And had built multiple courses. We sat down one night. He explained to me, 9 years has taken him to develop this prototype.
Right.
And it was that, Colin, you had mentioned it earlier, it was that aha moment. It was like, this is it. Many months later became our Double Loop golf course. We've gone through the whole patent pin process and trademark copywriting and all that kind of good jazz. That became the Double Loop and became ultimately evolved into the T36 Golf.
Love it. Love it. Well, I want to dig deeper into explaining the Double Loop, but we'll hold off on that for a sec. So let's kind of keep back at the early days here. And first of all, I love the fact that without the Dinarita, this whole thing, we wouldn't be having this conversation right now.
It's exactly right.
You just never know. If you would have sat like at a table rather than the bar, we wouldn't be here. I love that about these chance meetings in life and opportunities present themselves, and you just push the door open and see what happens and kind of build on that. Because I heard someone, I don't know, it was a TED Talk, I heard it a while ago, and I live this way. It's like, rather than demanding certainty, I'm striving for clarity with every conversation that I'm having.
And, that's right.
And there's so many people out there that it's a knock against them, but it's their personality. They want all the ducks lined up. They need everything to be perfect. And I'm using air quotes there that no one can see. There is no perfect, right? As far as the more you learn, and then you see other opportunities that reveal themselves, and not this and more of that. So talking about not this and more of that, I want to drill down into Baytown. And I know that, David, you talked about the opportunity there through a connection you had. Rio, you touched on this in our conversation before we started recording here, that there were other properties that we were looking at. So talk about that a little bit as far as how you shortlisted this. Or was it like full on Baytown, this is the one? Or were you looking at other properties too that had similar attributes? And then tie that into what criteria, what was kind of the winning checkboxes that made you decide to go in with Baytown and move forward with that?
Really, Baytown was the genesis. That was the genesis for T36 that launched what we believe is going to be an incredibly scalable opportunity. We look at things, the actionality of it, we definitely checked all those boxes. Is it scalable and is it sustainable? And I think on so many levels, T36 does that. You got the environmental side that's extremely important to us, both David and myself, 40 to 50% less water usage on a golf course. Mm-hmm. You know, we use 50% less real estate. You know, I hate to use the term the carbon footprint, but it is what it is. It really does compress the carbon footprint on a piece of property and opens up higher and best usage for the balance of it, which makes it so much fun for us as we look at this, whether it's a park, whether it's a residential solution, whether it's retail, whatever that is. And so that led us to the ability to go out into the marketplace and identify markets where there are public courses that are severely underutilized. That's one market for us. Resort operators that have run out of real estate, and now we can step in and take an existing golf course, compress it, and then help them utilize the balance of the real estate for higher and best usage. There's just a multiplicity of things that you can do with T36. And then, of course, the complement to all of it is the food and beverage component, which is very important to us as well. So,
yeah, let me circle back to the Baytown. As I said earlier, Colin, I don't play golf, but deeply involved in retail, ran and owned a large retail company at one point, been on the other side on the development ownership side of retail. Golf is just a segment of what of many sectors that have accelerated changes post-COVID. And so I've done a lot of work in immersive entertainment. I consulted with one of the leading VR groups out of Melbourne, Australia. Worked with a New York and a Nashville group on a immersive entertainment startup. So I was seeing what was going on in that part of retail, if you will, led by Top Golf. So I understood how golf was starting to change coming out of COVID. Going back to Baytown, like any great business, it's finding a solution to a problem. And what we found for the city officials in Baytown was we can give you an 18-hole course, true 18-hole experience on a smaller footprint. Now, the journey that's put us on is now that we've opened the course and we're getting a lot of national publicity. And again, we appreciate you reaching out to us to do your podcast. We realized along the way that this is a both big problem and big opportunity. Whereas Rio noted earlier, you've got a lot of golf courses out there. It may be municipal, it may be private, that are struggling because the requirements to use so much water. And we're able to cut the ability to water these courses is 40, 50, 60% less than a traditional course. And then we can also redevelop an existing course and free up valuable real estate for other uses. For a city, that could be a park. For a private developer to add tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars to an overall value of the real estate asset, the foundation of this was really driven by finding solutions for a problem. How do you get 18 holes when you don't have 150 to 200 acres to do it? And from there, we've started this journey and we've learned a lot. You know, we've got a lot of affirmation from the golf community and there's a lot of disruption. That's obviously the foundation of your show. Disruption is going on everywhere. People start talking to us about T36 golf or they're asking us where our place is, what's going on in golf. And everybody, even the most casual sports fan, understands the PGA, LIV, PIF, you know, what's going on at the very top. They see Tiger's cool putt-putt concept. Women's involvement in golf has increased by significant numbers, minorities by significant numbers. time of play is important to people now. And here's where I struggle, Colin, but I'm reading the 25 to 35 year old age range. They're playing the sport for fun, not for the competition. That's a weakness of mine. I don't do sports for hobbies for fun. We're really excited about the opportunities ahead of us because the timing for the T36 launch is in the middle of all this stuff going on. So almost every week in the news, there's some big golf story and it's all over the place. And T36 has a place there. We've been embraced by the sector, but you've also been embraced by some of the entrepreneurs that we met who are creating a disruption with their own businesses. And that's been fun for us as well.
Absolutely. We are now going to take a short break to learn about our episode presenting partner, Golf Genius Software. Golf Genius powers tournament management at over 10,000 private clubs, public courses, resorts, golf associations, and tours in over 60 countries. So if you're a golf professional or course operator who wants to save time, deliver exceptional golf experiences, and generate more revenue, check them out online at www.golfgenius.com. So 110 acres, that is the site that you have here. Then once introduced to the golf course architect with the double loop concept, it seemed like that was the foundation then. You had this fit. You had to refine it, work out the details, and also the design. But fundamentally, conceptually, and even the business model and the sustainability platform, those pieces were in place. People are listening right now and thinking, what the heck is this double loop? So why don't you explain that, the double loop, and also tie that in to the golfer's journey, the experience they have from the time they arrive at your course to the time that they leave?
Basically, the course, think of it this way. Take two fairways, slap them together. You have two separate tee box components. You got one common fairway. It splays to two separate green complexes. That's the essence of T36. And you do that nine times, get you your 18 green complexes. And essentially the double loop goes like this. You tee off one through nine. That's the outside loop in this case. Sometimes we vary that. And then you've got the back nine is the double loop piece of it, the inside loop. And we also color coordinate it. So you got red flags, 1 through 9, yellow flags, 10 through 18. So you tee off, you got your groups, you got your tee times that are staggered. You got time sequences for that. And then as you turn, we'll just say it's 10 groups that launched in the morning. When the 10th group turns onto 10, then you can reset the next queue of golfers onto the course behind the group 10 on 10. 30,000 foot level, that's basically how it works. Green complexes are no different than any other green complex that you might hit onto or putt on. We didn't spare any cost on making sure that we use the best grasses for our fairways, tee boxes, and greens. And it really does cut down the time sequence of 18 holes of golf. That's also a combination of blends of par threes.
Right. And what are you finding your average? I know it varies from day to day and also the skill level of players and their experience. But on average, what are you seeing people coming in for 18 holes is the length of the round?
We'll say 2.5 hours plus or minus.
And your course at Baytown is par what?
Par 68.
Par 68. Nice.
Yeah. So it's just under 6,000 yards.
In that particular situation, Colin, we were somewhat limited. We had some barriers we had to work around the way it was configured. But again, we took 12 remaining holes of what was originally an 18-hole golf course and redeveloped that into the T36 double loop. Yeah, I think what's important for the listeners out there, the day we opened the course, which was in mid-December, we had a lot of core golfers. You're probably a core golfer. They came out to play. We didn't know what kind of feedback we'd get from them. And they played the course. They came back. They said, this is real golf. It's challenging. It's fun. And interestingly enough, some of our peer group, our friends, and older, they don't hit the ball the way they once did. And we had guys out there, late 50s, early 70s, plenty challenging course. I always say, Colin, Rick put his greatest hits album together. The course design, there's some challenging holes out there. There's a guy that we met who's been in the golf business his whole career, a media guy, writes for 2 or 3 publications. And we were standing in the clubhouse. He hadn't even played the course yet. He's looking around, he understands the design, and he's like, David, this is where golf needs to go. For Rio and I to get that from those type of people, because we haven't grown up in the golf industry, it's a huge affirmation. And we knew as we got into this that a lot of people were doing 12-hole courses, 9-hole courses. Par threes are hot right now. The course in Tempe, Arizona is one of the hottest golf courses in the country, with not golf, with a lit course. Again, as we've been through this journey together, and there's been challenging days for us, but we know we're on the right track with the trends of golf. And for me, it's interesting because I can be totally objective. I didn't wake up saying, oh, I got to own a golf course. But the retail evolution's going on right now, and the evolution's going on in golf, they're very similar. We're excited to be part of it.
Nice, nice. So in the show notes for all of our listeners, I will include the layout of the course so you can see this double loop and all the greens and the tee boxes. And I'll also, of course, have a link to your website there with T36 so they can see. And hey, if they're in the neighborhood or close by, they can go for a round. And I'd love to play this course for me. The time it takes, and also myself as a 14, 15 handicapper in my late 50s now, I don't want to be playing 6,800 yards. You know, it'll destroy me. I'll have no fun. You know, I probably won't break 100. I definitely won't break 90. So playing around that 6,000 yards, that's kind of my sweet spot. So I got to play. Got to do it soon. Hey, I want to hear about this as far as the double loop design. So all of our listeners can understand, as you said, Rio, quite clearly, that the first groups go out first nine holes, and then once they're finished, the next nine go off and they go to the 10th hole. So that means by the time you've got, I guess, 17 or 18 groups on, the first group finishing up on the 18th, you have eight people, two groups of four on that hole. So talk to me about the design to ensure safety, to ensure that you're not crossing over and kind of clogging up and slowing things down, because it sounds like it would be easy, but I'm sure there's got to be some complexities there and some trade-offs that you'd have to make. So talk about the design decisions that were made in golf architecture here to ensure that the golf loop was fun, it was fast, and it was safe.
So to be clear, when that 10th group hits number 10, the next set of golfers starts on number one.
Yes.
So they're still following each other, like following the leaders through the course. The back loop finishes off, and then the front loop continues on the front nine and does the same thing to the 10 through 18. You're always following the leader. So you're not hitting on anybody. You're not crossing fairways and that type of thing. You're just going in one direction concentrically around the golf course. It's a blend of five, fours, and threes. Now, we've got different prototypes. We've got an executive prototype, which is a blend of fours and threes. And we mm-hmm. have a lit course, which we call a T36 golf park, which only takes up about 30 acres.
So
pending the market that we're in and pending the demands, the solutions that are driven, we can provide a 18-hole golf experience regardless of whether it's a short course, executive, or more traditional 18.
Gotcha. Well, a lot of what you're doing ties in. Remember that episode I talked about, the most downloaded ever, the woman that doesn't play golf? She is the co-author of the New York Times best-selling business methodology called Blue Ocean Strategy. So we talked about how applying Blue Ocean Strategy to the golf industry, wrote a blog post called Turning Green Fairways into Blue Oceans. And it sounds like that's what you're doing. And the overarching premise of that, and I encourage people to go back and listen to that episode. I'll include that link in the show notes also. But what they're talking about is you're not competing with what else is out there. You are actually creating new value, and that's what you're doing. It's a bit disruptive, but also you're expanding into new markets. And you're doing this by removing or eliminating a lot of things, enhancing the stuff that works, and introducing some new things. And the thing that you're eliminating is the need for 200 acres of land and compressing that down. In a way, you guys, with T36, you're on your way to a blue ocean strategy and unlocking new market segments.
Very familiar with the book, have it in the office. And I would say our vision with this, once we were on our way and we started looking at the branding, is we knew there are two types of people that probably would not have interest in this course. And that is the most hardcore, as I describe, the old school country club golfer that's wearing the sleeveless vest and is very much a traditionalist. And then the other end of the pyramid is somebody who just flat out doesn't play golf and has no interest.
Right.
Everybody else in the middle is wide open. And that's where we do our homework on the sport. We do our homework on our numbers. We may be new to golf course development, but this business and how we view this. And for me as a retail guy, it's going to be a great experience. You can run spreadsheets and projections and you can do all this beautiful branding and all this stuff. But at the end of the day, if it's not something that's enjoyed by the golfer themselves, then it won't make sense. And thus far, we're getting huge affirmation. When we started looking at who are we going to hire to manage the course for us, Rio reached out to like the top five management companies globally, and we didn't even know if they would return our phone call or not. And Troon's the leader. Yeah, yes. Troon and Don Shirey, plug it out for Don. He's awesome. One of their business development guys. All over us, as was Kemper and a couple of others. And so we knew when we got that type of response, Colin, that they were trying to figure out how their business will continue to adjust as golf changes.
And well, so, what's interesting about that, to tag on to David, we didn't know it at the time, but we had pitched an opportunity down in Florida that had all the bigs. All the big guns were pitching this deal, including the real estate groups that were involved, or just massive groups. Troon was on a list and Kemper Sports was there. And a common thread with this RFP, ultimately no one ended up getting awarded the RFP, which was a shame for that community. But anyway, that said, the buzz was, who's T36? These guys have come up with an amazing concept. It was maybe a couple weeks later, I started making these calls and they were hitting me up quick. They were calling me right back and going, hey guys, let's meet. Had a guy fly in the next day. David and I knew that it was an incredible, it was a humbling experience for us, but also a very affirming experience. Who we considered the legends in operating and maintenance of golf courses thought that much to want to find a way to align our stars together.
Yeah.
Not only an affirmation for us and the fact that we're in the Troon ecosystem and not placed with their municipal courses. And we're proud too for the city of Baytown. It was obviously important for us. As a Baytonian, you can go on to Troon's website and you're seeing some of the best golf courses in North America and the world. And there's T36 in Baytown on Troon's website. And then the other side of this, and I think you and Rio touched on this briefly before we started recording. We both do a lot of work with financial groups, and I've been heavily involved with private equity and high net worth private offices, hedge funds, REITs. I've done work for a lot of those groups over the last decade or so. And I was invited to be a speaker at a financial group gathering in Beverly Hills. And it's a typical thing, Colin. This was May, right after we started the project.
Right.
And so it's like, hey, tell us about yourself. So I introduce, I'm talking about my real estate company and on the board of a food tech company. In passing, I mentioned T36 because we had literally just formed the company. And after my session, these guys come up to very sophisticated financial guys. And they said, tell me about T36. And I explained to them a lot of what we've shared with you today. And they look at me and it's like, man, David, that is genius. We've gotten that type of feedback from that world as we go down with the path with the golf industry. In the last 2 weeks, we've had two different groups fly to Baytown who are interested in T36, very sophisticated private equity group. And those two groups in particular, they understand what's going on in golf. So they know golf's changing. And so the ability to provide a great 18-hole course experience on a smaller footprint opens up all kinds of opportunities, whether it's to take an existing course, pare down the size on it, free up real estate, build as part of a mixed-use development on the front end. I mean, there's a number of different variables and opportunities for this design that we have with T36. So as we're going through, and we've both been through lots of startups, I'm sure you probably have as well, there's days like, have I lost my mind? There's nothing like a startup. I mean, it's high energy. But to get that outside affirmation that we're headed down the right path, both in the golf industry and the financial industry as well, those have been really, really important for us, and getting the course open and having the golfers come back and say, hey, this is really good. We really like that. That's where we're bullish. I mean, it feels like we've been in this project forever. The reality is the course has been open for about 60 days. So we're only a couple of months into, and it's the dead of winter in Houston, and we're still getting great affirmation.
Well, you managed to answer couple of my next questions here. I wanted to ask about partnerships, especially on that financial side, as far as how you managed to put this deal together, but you managed to cover that quite eloquently. So thank you for that. So I want to switch a little bit here and talk about the brand. A lot of the work that I do is in our own brands and what we're creating in the golf and sport entertainment space. I'm always curious to learn. So the reference to T36 and T36 Golf, tell me about that. How did that come about? The name, what does it refer to? And perhaps what were some of the other names that you were spitballing that you shortlisted before you landed on T36?
Want to start, Dave?
Yeah, I'll start. Again, our viewpoint on this was we wanted to be respectful to the history of the sport. We wanted to straddle the fence between respect of the sport and also recognize how it's changing.
Mm-hmm.
Everything from color palettes to the name came with that viewpoint. And we sat down with the group that helped us on the branding. I gave them some very specific visuals, if you will. And I said, I want to make sure that is not how we're represented in our branding. And then the fact that there's a double loop, and Rio can touch on this. He's far better at this than I am, Colin. But you can actually take what amounts to 9 fairways and you can play 36 holes.
Mm.
So
You cross tees. Yeah.
Right, right.
So, and I have been through this branding exercise on the retail side, both with as a retailer, on the development side, with big scale shopping centers, specifically outlet centers. For me personally, and I think Rio agrees, is I was looking for something that resonates with people, something that's just easy to remember. And when we landed on T36, man, that's it. That's our story, so to speak. If you're a Seinfeld fan, that's your show, Jerry. And we've gotten great feedback on that as well, because it feels to us anyway, and the consumer will continue to tell us if we're right or wrong, but it feels new and fresh without kitschy at all. I mean, it feels legit because it tells a story. You know, every time somebody asks us, tell us about T36, how'd you come up with a name like you did? We could do a whole podcast with you on just, you know, the branding exercise we went through in the name. There's plenty of opportunities to explain, and people get that real quick. And I think that's important. I've been in situations where people overcomplicate the message and the branding gets confusing and all those elements, just like I'm sure you have experience with. That's a quick answer for you on how we got to the T36.
No, I love that. And it's memorable and you do remember it. So that's what you want. So you touched on the sustainability overlay as far as your carbon footprint reduction, and that's awesome. Let's look at your website here. If you want to talk your vision and your values between making it exciting, welcoming, and original, how has that resonated with the people that have played so far? I realize you got a very small sample set of only 60 days so far, but I'm curious to hear already as far as the demographics, as far as the gender balance, are younger people playing? People you talked about that maybe play only a couple of rounds a year, they want to play more for fun and make it social and create memories around that with their and experiences with their friends. So tell me a little bit about the demographics that you've seen so far as compared to, let's say, a traditional par 72, 200 acre, 6,800 yard course.
Part of that goes to Troon and their programming. We all collectively believe strongly about youth golf. And the introduction of the youth player to golf, that was something that resonated with both David and myself when we originally were introduced to the property and the fact that the kids couldn't play golf in their community. I mean, what is that? They're having to drive 30 plus minutes away, 45 minutes away to play golf. A community should have an area where they can come and commute to a spot. And what better than golf to introduce these kids to a great sport, the challenges that come from that, just life experiences. The First Tee program is very important to us. When we launched the course, we had the three high schools represented. They were enjoying a great day of golf. For us, it's their home course. It's a place for them to go and learn how to become better golfers and learn all the other social experiences that come from that. So that's fundamental to both David and myself is the youth segment of it. As far as the overall demographic, we're seeing all kinds of ages, all kinds of whatever the economic strata is. They're all coming out and playing. We're a daily fee course. We're not private. So we really believe that we want everybody to experience a good round of golf. And so that's important to us. David, you may or may not know about this. I was talking to the pro out there. We have one guy that comes out there 4 times a week now and plays. It's just whenever he can fit it in, he comes out and plays 9, and he's an older gentleman. We're excited about the larger swath of age groups and social economic groups that this course allows us to have folks out and play golf.
And Colin, I think important thing to point out, and we could probably segue this into talking about our food and beverage. You know, the work I've done, real estate, transactional type work in 44 of the 50 states. plus internationally as well. And I can tell you that suburban America, communities the size of Baytown, I grew up in Northeast Tennessee in a town about the size of Baytown. Everybody's looking for a community gathering spot. And that's why coffee shops do so well. Many places, that's microbreweries, you know, the last 10, 20 years of those two categories. So our vision here with T36 is it's a golf course, and we'll talk a little bit in detail about the food and beverage experience, but people want to go hang out, whether they're golfers or not. Our viewpoint on our food and beverage from the gathering spot is there's a municipal course in Venice Beach, California. The restaurant there is called the Pinmar. Venice Beach is as eclectic as it gets, from tech billionaires living there to old hippies who've been there for 50 years.
Right, right.
And the restaurant is a community gathering spot. You go there and it may be a third of the crowd are actually golfers. Everybody else is coming to hang out. You got this great indoor-outdoor seating, got a really great menu, great drinks, cold beer. We'll talk about our food and beverage, and Rio did an amazing job on the design of that, but it's a reflection of that. And people are excited. We want a place where the folks that live in the Baytown, the adjacent communities, come out and hang out, because the view corridor up a golf course, again, I don't play golf, but this is the third house I've had on a golf course. And what I love about living on a golf course is it's a beautiful setting. You got this lush, big backyard you don't have to maintain. You've got trees, you've got all these beautiful things in the sight line, and our restaurant has an indoor-outdoor seating, and the view corridors, water features, mature trees, green. I mean, it's a really pretty place. And so part of the DNA for T36 is not just golf, but it's creating a community gathering spot.
Love it, love it. So, hey, the few minutes we have left, can you articulate on that a bit, Rio? Talk about the physical infrastructure design and also the customer experience design that you have put in place at Baytown to manifest what David had just referred to there.
Yeah, so happy to. I just want to make clear, you'd asked earlier about the time sequence. It's 3 hours and 30 minutes is what the golf course actually plays out. So just want to make sure that your listeners have the right numbers there, which is still pretty fast.
Yeah.
The actual restaurant itself, very simplistic. I do have an architectural background, by the way, so you and I have that common thread, Colin. I kind of turned to Dave. I said, you know what? Let's build something here that you and I would love, great bar experience to spend time at. That was sort of the impetus behind how we designed it. It's sort of a hybrid. It has kind of a sports bar vibe to it, but it also pays an homage to the industrial area. It's a petrochemical community, so let's embrace that. So it has that going for it. We didn't just, gee whiz, let's put a menu together. We went out to Arizona and sat down with U.S. Foods and developed a flavor profile of the area so that we were going to be hopefully successful in what the people in the area like to eat.
Mm-hmm.
So it has that going for it. The menu is awesome. It's just really, really killer. We've got a speakeasy. I don't know of any other golf course clubhouse that has a speakeasy, but we have one. So you have to enter it along the side of the restaurant, and you've got a little door you have to open to get into the speakeasy.
Love that.
So it has that cool vibe going for it. We've got a founders club that gives that person that wants to have a little bit more of a membership experience. They get these, no, we're not on video, but it's like these Black Max Centurion cards. It's called Founders Club, QR code in the back, and you get all kinds of discounts and other amenities that come with that membership. The pro shop blends into the restaurant. It's very distinctly different. It's two different spaces inside the building.
Gotcha. Gotcha. I can't wait to get there. But once again, in the show notes, I will include some pictures and the link, as I mentioned, to T36 Golf at Baytown, so our listeners can then experience the look and the feel of this. So, hey, to wrap up, I could keep going for another hour here, but I want to be respectful of your time here, but I do want to finish up with the future for T36 Golf. You've done, as we talk about in the startup space here, first you nail it, and then you scale it. It sounds like now you've got the validation, you know the economics of this work, you know, all the other elements that work as far as the experience and the differentiators that you have and the value proposition. So what's next in 2024 and beyond?
but I have a feeling with you two, you're not going to be a one and done here. So what can you tell us, pulling the curtain back? What's in store? Are there going to be 1,000 T-36s across the world, or what's the next couple of steps here for both of you?
Do you want to start, David?
Yeah, I'll share one thing. I mean, yeah. Go back to the Blue Ocean marketing strategy, Colin, you mentioned earlier. We did not do this to open to do one location. Everybody was waiting for proof of concept on the golf play when we opened. We checked that box day one back in December. We've already entered into dialogue with a really diverse group of individuals and courses that could be redeveloped. When Rio and I started this, it was absolutely, we want to scale this up. We're also looking at international opportunities as well. We've been around for a while, so we've got a lot of experience. And the way we've got the model set up is we don't have to take on risk if we don't really want to. We don't have a number that says, oh, Colin, we're going to do 50, and you know, we do 20 bad deals. And 3 years later, you're getting your viewers saying, what happened to those T-36 guys? We're very calculated in exploring new opportunities. Finding a capital partner, for example, to scale this up is something we're in the midst of right now, and continue to be part of that modern golf movement that's going on at a rapid pace right now, and being respectful of the sport, but also doing our own thing. Rio, I know you probably got different viewpoints.
No, I think that's accurate. If I had to dial it down a little bit as far as more specificity, Colin, we're looking at deals as far west as Colorado area, as far north as Virginia, certainly south, Texas, and Florida right now. And they're all different. And that's the beauty of what we're doing here. It's every course design, it's got a different set of challenges associated with it, whether it's a T-36 golf park or whether it's a T-36 executive course. So it's going to be a fun ride for us as we introduce T-36 both domestically and internationally down the Caribbean. We're looking at some opportunities right now. From what you were telling me, we need to go up to Canada and spend some time up there.
Maybe there's a partnership in the wings waiting to happen there, because you have some connectivity up here. And as I did mention earlier, Rio, yes, Canada has more golfers per capita than any other country in the world. We have 6 million recreational golfers on a population of 40 million. So there's a lot of people swinging clubs up here. There's no question. And a lot of golf courses, and that whole land use economics and underutilized spaces, whether they're existing golf courses that are under distress or other pieces of property that can be converted, as you mentioned, that smaller size of around between probably 65 and 120 acres, depending on the type of facility that you bring into market and the profile of that. So that opens up probably 3 to 5 times as many land asset opportunities than you'd have for 170 to 200 acre traditional golf course.
And Colin, and I think the conversation we've had with you is no different than we have with a lot of folks. We touched on it briefly, but just the environmental impact on a positive way is something that, yeah, I've done a lot of business in California, the West Coast, Oregon, Washington, Arizona. We know that that's going to resonate well in those areas. And water itself is such a commodity that's going to be more controversial, I think, the rest of our lives. You know, the use of water, water shortages. We haven't even really hit hard on that with you, or quite frankly, with a lot of people yet, but we know that's going to resonate and create opportunities also.
Absolutely. And it's also good for business. I'm sure you're already developing your, as we have now, your ESG commitments between environmental sustainability and governance, and what you're creating. There's no faking it there with T-36. It's baked right into your business model. It's right there.
Yes, absolutely. We're USGA rated, which was a big get for us. So we're trying to check all the boxes, or at least most of them.
Love it. Love it. Well, like I said, I can keep going on here, but let's cap it at that. Who knows? When you guys expand, I think in another year, maybe two, we're going to have you back on the show to give us an update on what's going on with global domination of T-36 in the golf industry. So as we finish up here, guys, why don't one of you let our listeners know where they can learn more and where they connect with you on social media and also the website to find out more with Baytown?
David, you're the social guy, man. Just
sure.
Put it out there.
T36golf.com is our primary website. We're on LinkedIn. We're on Facebook. We're on Instagram. You can follow myself and Rio on LinkedIn. We're also posting a lot of our own information. David Hinkle, Rio Valerano on LinkedIn. Look us up. Hit us up with private messages or emails. We love to talk to people about what we're doing. We've got a lot of advocates out in the marketplace for us already. And we appreciate their support. And Colin, we really appreciate you having us on today and letting us share our story.
Absolutely. Yeah, thank you so much.
It is my pleasure. Well, as I always do in the show notes, I will include the links that David had mentioned there. And I also will be creating a bio page for not one, but both of these fine gentlemen. So we'll also have the easy ability to connect with them through LinkedIn and other ways so you can get in touch. And also you can reach out to me if you want me to connect you to these two gentlemen. So Rio and David, thank you so much for your time today on the Mod Golf Podcast. This is right in the wheelhouse of the stories that we love to tell. Love what you're doing in the golf industry to innovate yet still respect the traditions of the game. It's awesome. So thanks so much again for joining me today.
Great. Thank you, Colin. Appreciate
you're awesome,
you.
Colin. Thank you.
Thank you.
So that's a wrap for this episode of the Mod Golf Podcast. If you enjoyed this conversation about entrepreneurship in the golf industry, you can find more compelling episodes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you like to listen in. And don't forget to subscribe to the show on our homepage to hear about upcoming episodes and to enter our latest golf product giveaway. I'm your host, Colin Weston. Thanks very much for joining me. Bye for now.